rolling for September 29th, 2015. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Instagram is that great way to find more information. Instagram has overtaken Twitter with 400 million active users. Are you an active user on Instagram?
I am not. My children are, and my wife, who follows my children, is. But I have never been part of Instagram.
I wonder what it is that keeps me from being a really active Instagram user. I guess it's the pictures worth a thousand words thing. I talk a lot. I don't know if you've noticed that in the last 63 weeks.
You do a little bit of talking.
I talk a lot, and I don't take a lot of photographs.
Well, I think that Instagram has value, especially for my children's age group. Facebook is what I typically use. You typically use Twitter.
I'm mostly Twitter, yeah.
Okay. But, you know, with Google Circles and all those other things out there, there's only so much time in a day, and you kind of find the thing that you're going to use. You know, LinkedIn, I'm part of too. I get friend requests on that. I shouldn't call them friend requests, whatever, professional requests. I accept some of them if I have a relationship, but, you know, the things that get advertised to me, I'm leery of taking on another thing that I've got to manage.
There's certainly an ebb and flow of social media. Mm-hmm. Twitter has been dominant for a while now, and they're on the backside of that. Instagram is on the rise.
Well, part of that could be finding a way to monetize it, to make it profitable for those companies.
Twitter hasn't done that yet.
They haven't, and we'll end up seeing how this kind of plays out. The idea that Facebook is the final place that we'll all be, I don't know, but I can tell you that if I'm Yellow Pages, I'm stressing out because your business model is dead. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn, you know, I don't know how powerful it is. LinkedIn, especially with professional networking and stuff like that, I don't know. I basically have a presence there too.
Yeah. Brings us to our film at 11. And Chip, you saw Foxcatcher, one of those Oscar nominated films from last year, and you finally picked that one up. How was that?
Was it Oscar nominated?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was good. Steve Carell plays John DuPont, who is a very wealthy person from old money here in the United States, who has a desire to work with the wrestling team. Ends up creating some relationships with some wrestlers. Ultimately wants two gentlemen. One is played by Channing Tatum, and the other is Mark Ruffalo,
mm-hmm.
who plays the Hulk. But he is the coach that Steve Carell's character wants. They come in, they win some gold. They're trying to compete. DuPont has the money to back U.S. wrestling on the Olympic level and on the world level. DuPont is kind of a guy kind of trying to find his way in the world, a very strange bird, which definitely that was Carell's character.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, he kills one of the coaches. This is a true story. I wouldn't say this is a fast-paced, great movie. This is an intriguing movie because what it says to me is that many, when you start moving to the more esoteric sports, they need funding, and there's always a place for someone who has a passion for it. And those people who have passion sometimes turn out to be like this DuPont character, you know, weird and ultimately dangerous.
I think the word they prefer is eccentric.
Well, eccentric could be the word we could go for. I'm going to go with weird because it is... Oh, it was crazy. It's okay. Crazy. Anyway, it was an interesting movie. Very old money. Philadelphia area, I think.
Makes a difference. The other eccentric group that you watched was Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, the story of the National Lampoon. We talked about this one last week before
we
it
did.
Came out. And then it came out and you rushed out to your Apple TV and plunked down your $6 and watched it.
I did.
How did you like this one?
First of all, Apple TV is the best at being able to get independent films. They're going to have a small, I would say relatively small audience. This was perfect. It was $6.99. I flipped it on. You could immediately see this was the planter that you planted the flower bulbs in and everything that it bloomed from it.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it seems like National Lampoon had three or four different waves of creativity. We got interviews with the editors, with some writers, with the artists. The first group of artists they ended up having was sort of a hippie group of people, kind of esoteric, not quite, if you know, are you familiar with Robert Crumb and the Underground Comics sort of design. That was kind of them. That was for the first 7 issues that they really couldn't get the beat. The way it was edited, it was still very out there. And what they needed was to tighten it up. They brought in the second art director. It's probably the art that we're all familiar with, where they took things, they used a postage stamp as a good example. He goes, well, why can't we make things that look like a postage stamp? They're just fake. And that's exactly what they did. And it created a decorum would be a good way to describe it, a way of presenting the material that was pleasing to the eye. It tightened up the magazine quite a bit. The number of writers that ended up working for them were just unbelievable. And they were describing the two founders, who were the editors, and the amount of work that they were able to bang out. The guy, he goes, one of the writers said, you know, I could bang out, you know, 300 or 400 words, and it would take me half a day. And he goes, then this guy would lock himself in his office, and he would come out with like 2,000 words and ready for print. We ended up understanding why they ended up getting a lot of the artists they got for their stuff. So they were also known for like the New Yorker type of art, the little blurbs and where they have comic art and stuff like that. Neil Adams worked for them and a whole bunch of other people. But many of these artists had gobs and gobs of work that was rejected. Maybe it was too gross or maybe too on the point or too sensitive, you know, whatever it was. Magazines make decisions. They found an outlet here. He goes, we didn't pay a lot, but it got printed. We talked a little bit about the radio show that ended up coming out of this, and all the players that you know, many of them were Second City here in Chicago, ended up making their way there. Bill Murray and Chevy Chase and John Belushi was the star of all of them. These, you can see the connections they ended up making through National Lampoon Magazine, through the radio show. The third wave that P.J. O'Rourke ended up becoming the editor, and that's after Hollywood came in and started taking all the talent, and the first movie they produced was Animal House. It created, from that movie, the whole genre of that mm-hmm. type. That originally was written as a high school story, by the way.
Interesting.
And because it had too much sex in it, sure. They had to move it to a college setting. The next movie that did not have National Lampoon title on it was Caddyshack, that had many of the same players. Many of the actors came from it. So it's interesting that Caddyshack is a classic also that didn't get good reviews at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They were very, by the way, Animal House, they were very concerned with, because nobody wanted to touch it. But when it played to the audience, the audience responded to it. And it definitely is, I mean, my goodness, what is it? If you're a college student and you want to have a party, Animal House gets thrown on, and all of a sudden the whole world goes to a different level.
Yep.
For good or bad, right there. I do see the Saturday Night Live was initially offered to National Lampoon. They turned it down. They felt they could not take on another project at that time. So Lorne Michaels was brought in, and who did he hire? John Belushi, Chevy Chase, Gilda Radner. He basically just hired the off-Broadway performers that were performing in New York City at the time and brought them over, just basically bled the talent. That's mm-hmm. And ultimately, the failure of National Lampoon was because the talent ended up getting sucked up into Hollywood and getting sucked up into other projects. But, oh, what a fascinating, fascinating movie. I highly recommend it.
Some great nostalgia. Those creators of those works are certainly a part of our collective memory, that zeitgeist of mm-hmm. how comedy worked for a very long time. And like you said, those things that we planted there have grown into so many different branches of comedy today.
Last week, I don't think I really hit what the legacy of this would be. To me, the legacy is maybe The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I think the result of National Lampoon and this comedy, we are the products of that, as far as we are the children of these people. So where National Lampoon may have made fun of the 40s and 50s, the Leave It to Beaver Society, we are the latchkey kids that they had. That for good or bad, we're Gen X. But I do think that they've grown a lot over the time. Chevy Chase had a great interview in this. I enjoyed listening to his stories. PJ O'Rourke had great interviews. Ivan Reitman had interviews in it. The interviews just keep getting better and better and better. I recommend this.
All right. That's probably one that I will go back into the archives and watch one of these days when I get time. Speaking of the archives, we have a film opening, and this is one of those limited Fathom Events kind of films. They are bringing out a version of The Iron Giant, the original 1999 animated movie about a kid and his robot. They're going to put it into theaters on a very limited basis, and they've added two scenes to it.
Sure. Now, this is Brad Bird. Mm-hmm. So Brad Bird, if we know him through Pixar, through Ratatouille and The Incredibles.
So we know his work, and The Iron Giant was his first.
And that's right. And it was released through Warner Brothers. If The Iron Giant somehow had been a Disney film versus being through Warner Brothers, it would be considered a classic. Mm-hmm. So instead of a cult classic, because it is a very good movie. It seems like they had budget issues, which all movies eventually end up having. You got to get them out. And this may be a way of going Lucas on them, you know, revisiting this work, tightening up a little bit, adding the scene back in, and bringing it to the forefront. And obviously, Brad Bird's success made this possible. I'm thinking The Iron Giant, maybe Titan A.E., are two films that kind of get lost because they don't have a Disney engine behind them, refreshing them every 5 or 10 years with a new, you know, Blu-ray version, Diamond Edition mm-hmm. type of thing. And unless you have a body of work, maybe like DreamWorks has, it's really difficult to kind of market them together. But what we get is we get two presentations. It looks like there's one on the 30th and one on October 4th that you can go and you can watch a digitally restored version that will eventually make its way through a Blu-ray or a 4K release or something like that.
I'm not a big fan of The Iron Giant. I was not enthralled by it when I watched it the first time in 1999. It was just a nice movie about a kid and his robot, but there's a lot of people who really see this as a very, very touching, very important movie.
I remember watching it. I didn't watch it when it first came out. I caught it maybe on television. I don't remember that much about the story other than Harry Connick Jr. plays a character in mm-hmm. it, that it felt good when I watched it. I think that it could be a classic. Like I said, if it was a Disney film, there's no doubt it would have been the best Disney film of that era, or possibly. So I do think that there is a place for it, and I'm glad that a new generation could look for it.
The other movie that you found is a German film called Labyrinth of Lies. This is one of those movies about what happened after World War II and all the paperwork. Germans love their paperwork.
Germans love paperwork. All right, so this takes place in the 60s, it looks like. It is in German, so you're reading the English subtitles. Germany has rebuilt. It's a very modern society at that time. But they're kind of, I shouldn't say they're denying the pain of the past. They're trying to forget the pain of the past. And this looks like it's a story about trying to address many of the people who had the war crimes, who were part of the leadership that escaped. And because they escaped, where are they? Looking for justice, things of that nature. Germans and paperwork comes into play, and they're heading off to Central America and different places to find them. This looks like an interesting movie. I would like to say it's going to be on Netflix. I don't know if it will be, but if it was, I definitely would probably watch it at some point. I don't know if I'd go to a theater to see it then.
Yeah, sounds good to me. The one that really, really is going to be good, though, forget all of those movies that you just suggested, Chip. You have to go to the movie theater, and you have to see The Martian.
Now, this is Ridley Scott.
This is Ridley Scott, and he is going to do this book justice. We've reviewed this book on the show at least once, if not twice. Mm-hmm. This was my favorite book of 2014. It is such an intriguing, amazing story. We've talked about it before, but it's the story of an astronaut who goes to Mars and is left there alone due to an accident that happens that everybody thinks that he's dead, but I know this is all spoilers. He's alive. He's alive.
By the way, it's all in the trailer. You end up learning this too.
Yeah, it's in the commercial.
So we have the first rule is don't get left on Mars.
Yeah.
And two, if you are going to get left on Mars, you need to be
a botanist.
Yeah, be very resourceful.
Yeah, be a botanist. I have high expectations for this. Like I said, it was my favorite book from last year. I've suggested to everybody who says, oh, you have a podcast? I say, yes, we do a book of the week. And they go, oh, what book should I read? The Martian is the book you should read. The science of this book is amazing. The mathematics that it takes to do this adventure, it's the most adventurous mathematics I've ever read in my life.
Well, there you go. You've hit one, the book seems very interesting. And this movie also, it just seems like that they have a very capable cast. They had the right amount of resources to put this together. I'm hoping it's going to turn out to be a very good film, because this does look like, you know, if you're going to go to the movie theater, this is probably the movie to watch.
Yeah, I have very high expectations, and I hope this movie can meet those expectations. I will be seeing this movie in the movie theater.
Excellent.
Brings us to our Appetite, our app of the week, and you found something very interesting called MyMe, M-Y-M-E-E, MyMe.com.
And it's very important to state this. You may be able to download it, but it probably won't be useful to you because you have to work with a professional to use it. But very similar to your health app that you have on your iPhone, if you use an iPhone, or MyFitnessPal or something of that nature.
All of the other ones that we've suggested over the last year and a half.
Sure. What this allows you to do is, if you're experiencing some kind of challenge, it allows you to kind of document, you know, what did you eat? Where were you when you experienced this? What the hope is that by creating data points, you may be able to isolate what is the trigger for something. You know, why do you have hay fever when you do?
Because it's the fall and I'm miserable. I've pinpointed the problem. My body does not like the Midwest.
You know, why do you feel tired after eating Thanksgiving meal? You know, things like that that you may never be able to figure out the answer to. You know, what it does is with your professional that you work with, it allows you to track different things. Now, more data could just be more data.
It could be just noise.
Sure. But it also could be useful. Mm-hmm. And this is where the article I found this is a man who tracked 5 years of sneezes might have the fix to your pollen allergy. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he did. He was following certain things he did, what he was eating before this, you know, where he was this. Was he at home or was he, you know, outside? Yeah, you may be able to isolate many fun things to make your life better by using something like this.
Big data can be very useful. It doesn't always mean that big data is very useful. Again, there's a lot of noise to data. If I'm going to collect a lot of data, I'm going to see some of that data that does not apply to my problem. Mm-hmm. But I might find the key, the solution to my problem in that data.
Sure. You may be able to. Very nice. We're in a nice time to
talk about allergies.
Well, make it very easy to track the stuff, whether it's sleep, whether it's food intake, anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fall. I'm just not breathing. call me in the spring when I can breathe. Brings us to our book it, our book this week. And, you know, I read through the Hugo and Nebula best novel from 2012. It's called Among Others by Joe Walton. And
tell me about your love of fantasy.
I don't love fantasy. This story is a fantasy story, not a sci-fi story. Even though it won the Hugo and the Nebula, which are the fantasy and sci-fi awards.
Tell me how much you love movies with fairies. Books with fairies in it.
Yeah, this is a good story. It is well written. It's about a young lady who is able to talk to fairies, and she has a mother who's a witch, and she escapes her mother and moves in with her father, who had already escaped her mother years before. Mm-hmm. And then her father doesn't know what to do with her, so he sends her to boarding school, where she is miserable because she can't commune with nature, because she also probably is a witch and she can talk to fairies. It's a good story. It's fine. It's not my genre.
It's not your genre, but you thought it was capable, and it was worthy of the awards it got?
It got awards because it was well-written and well-thought-out. It is an interesting story about a young lady who has struggles. If you disregard all the stuff that I don't like, the magic and the fairies and the wizards and the witches and wardrobes, then you've got a good story about a girl with struggles. She has a physical disability. She's in a new school where she's getting bullied. She doesn't get respected because she's the new girl with a physical disability. There, it is a capable story, and it's worth a read. Not my genre.
Okay.
Brings us to our Now the News. The first thing on the news, oh look, Chip, the first thing on the news is the Muppets were on, and they're going to be on again tonight.
Oh, I did watch the Muppets. I watched it. I'm not usually a television watcher, but this was very interesting to me, and I caught it.
I watched it with joy in my face, as you can probably hear in my voice right now. I laughed out loud at the premiere of The Muppet Show last Tuesday, and I expect big things from The Muppets. I expect them to be phenomenal on this season of comedy. I expect... One thing that I was a little bit frustrated on the first episode was I expect more music. There's a formula to the Muppets that is guest stars and music acts, and their musical act in the first episode was really put to the end and really not utilized to their best, I think.
You're right. The guest star was Imagine Dragons, which is a very hot band right now, and I think we got maybe, we didn't even get half a song.
No.
So and on some level, it should either end with, like, somehow they all run into a place and the Imagine Dragons are there and you're going to sing the song with them or something.
Well, it's very easy because the story of the Muppets is Miss Piggy has a late-night talk show.
Sure.
Late-night talk shows can end with the musical guest. This program about a talk show should end with the musical guest. It's very simple. And they didn't do that, and that was a little frustrating. You got something out of it.
I did. Ricky Lindholm.
Yeah, Ricky Lindholm is the young lady from Garfunkel and Oates. Very funny. It just makes
and they,
you smile.
And they just came out with a new album, and it's called Secretions.
Don't you love them? They are so phenomenal. They're so funny and talented. And she is Fozzie's girlfriend.
She is.
In The Muppets.
Trying to make it work. Trying to get mom and dad to accept that she loves a bear.
it's such a great story. It makes me smile. I think that we're going to see something great out of The Muppets this year.
Oh, it seems very interesting. Garfunkel and Oates, by the way, I think they perform at Upright Citizens Brigade.
Okay.
And they've got music that's available through iTunes, but the new album, Secretions, just... That should tell you that they have fun, and obviously Garfunkel and Oates are Art Garfunkel and John Oates, not related, right? Not related
right.
at all.
Right. Yeah, and those two girls are so talented and obviously have an interesting relationship with Bill Prady because the other part of Garfunkel and Oates was featured on The Big Bang Theory last
really?
Season.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Well, I enjoyed it. I certainly wouldn't say that it was as tight as I would like it. I think over the next two or three episodes, maybe they'll get some of their, you get your walking feet, and you get sort of the...
Happy feet.
That's right.
I got those happy feet.
You get sort of how it kind of plays out. I'm hoping it's going to be a very good season, but I enjoyed the first one. We'll see how it works.
And then you actually sat down and watched South Park.
I did. I have not seen South Park in a long time.
I have not watched this show in over a decade. It lost its luster to me. It's been on for 19 years.
It's unbelievable. And by the way, I don't... It's not like I sit around watching cartoons all the time. It just happened... The advertising just popped me.
Me neither.
Well, anyway, this was... there was a funny story, and obviously South Park is always very topical. And Mr. Garrison, who is the teacher, was the loudmouth Trump guy, and he was what was happening is something happened up in Canada, we learn, and all these Canadians, these people from outside, from the outside the border were moving. Obviously there's something going on, so Mr. Garrison thinks that we should put a wall on the border between America and Canada, And the Canadians, he gets to the border and he learns that the Canadians have put a wall up. and they're trying to keep the Americans out. And Mr. Garrison spends his time trying to get over into Canada. There's something ends up happening that obviously is basically a slap towards Donald Trump. I don't know if I'll catch a lot of South Park's, but I do think that it is always timely. And it, you know, anything that gets groups upset, I think is probably okay on some level.
And I enjoy Trey Parker and Matt Stone so much. They are so smart. They put together these ideas in mm-hmm. such a way that they are so entertaining. I do enjoy their work, but I haven't really sat down and watched South Park for a while.
I was going to say, very similar to National Lampoon, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to talk about issues straight on without looking like you're the either the racist or whatever. Trey Parker and Matt Stone seem to be very good at presenting this information.
Good news, Chip. The courts have finally ruled that you can sing Happy Birthday in a restaurant without paying royalties.
Isn't that nuts?
It's crazy.
What's so crazy about it is every restaurant in the world has had to create their own version of singing Happy Birthday.
Without saying Happy Birthday.
Exactly. Without singing the Happy Birthday song.
Mm-hmm.
Because they if they would sing it, they would have to pay royalties.
Or at least they thought that they would. Or they could potentially be sued by the owners of the song Happy Birthday.
And the owners bought the rights to this song. I think it was for $15 million. They get paid roughly $2 million a year to have the rights to this song. They usually do not go out to your home and say you can't sing it. But what they'll do is if it's something that's a money-making type of thing,
mm-hmm.
like if you're in a movie and you're singing Happy Birthday, mm-hmm. you pay the royalties. Well, it looks like that has changed. There's a California judge who said this song is now part of the public domain. It's been long enough, and we'll see. Well, I'm sure it's going to be challenged. This song from 1893, I think it was when it came out. This song is now part of the public domain from this ruling, where it should be. Think of Peter. The last time I'm thinking of something that paid these type of royalties was probably Peter Pan. Which J.M. Barrie had left to a boys' home over in England, and it actually had paid royalties for, you know, all those years to help support that home. And when it came out of, you know, to the public domain, immediately Dave Barry and another group, they wrote three or four books for Walt Disney for it. The Pan movie that keeps getting delayed that we'll talk about in a few weeks from now, that became a prequel, the ability to use those characters in the public domain. At some point, they should not be under copyright. Happy Birthday, at this point, should not be under copyright. So, good for us.
Good for us. Good for TGI Fridays.
This is an intellectual property argument, and intellectual property arguments are very deep, and there are plenty of sides. You will read articles on both sides, whether we should have intellectual property or whether we should not have intellectual property. I promise you, they're both very convincing. So this is a very, very difficult subject when you go into it, and attorneys spend a lot of time and a lot of money protecting that intellectual property. So we'll see what ends up happening.
You found an article about a new calculator that Casio is putting out, and the irony of that being put out right next to the Fire tablet that Amazon is putting out for $50. This new calculator is a pricey piece.
It seems very interesting. We have two pieces of our hardware. One costs $50, the other one costs $220, and one is a tablet, and one is just a calculator. Now, if you go to your browser, you basically put in calculator and a calculator pop up. In fact, if on any iPhone there's a calculator, there's no cost. So why is this special? Well, it really isn't special, other than it's made out of pretty metals and things of that nature. And they're only going to make 5,000 of them this year because the demand for them are just not that great. So we end up having this piece of hardware that you would think that the tablet would be really expensive and the calculator would be cheap, but it's the other way around. Amazon has put out their Fire tablet. It only has 8 gigs. It's not the most powerful one, but it's very capable of running movies and doing a number of things. And they're running that for $50 as a sort of, I would say, a loss leader,
mm-hmm.
Maybe even the price that it costs to have it. So Amazon seems to be wanting to get in your home and get you using their stuff.
And that's the key, is Amazon wants to hand you the door to get into Amazon. Mm-hmm. Amazon Prime offered a discounted rate last week because they want people to get in the door, get into that ecosystem. That's a great ecosystem to be a part of.
It is. And that was, by the way, getting back to the deal they had for Amazon Prime last week, Brad Steele was showing it. They were offering the $99 Amazon Prime membership, which is their Netflix alternative for the year, mm-hmm. and the shipping, next day shipping at no extra cost is really what it comes down to. They were offering that for $67. Mm-hmm. Well, man, goodness, I would like to pay $67 for that rather than the $99 I pay for it. The tablet becomes very useful, and they want you to use a lot of it, and they want to sell a whole bunch of them. So there you go, $50 versus $220 for a Casio.
Supply and demand, well, that's what it comes down to. Brings us to a story that you found about a Kickstarter project where a group of people have created a portable wind turbine power station that you can buy for about $400 on Kickstarter, and it can take some wind power and make it into electricity in a really efficient way.
Well, the $400 one, you know, may be able to power your iPhone or something like that.
Right.
I think the real story is the one that's a little bit more expensive. Mm-hmm. See, if you were going to do your home and you wanted a big windmill or something like that, you're probably looking at about $70,000 to be able to do that today. No. The internet loves you, wants you to be happy. It looks like they've created one that would maybe power a small cabin, mm-hmm. something like that. The Trinity 2500, you can get one for about $6,000. $6,000. Mm-hmm. And if you remember from our story from a few weeks ago, we were talking about Elon Musk and the batteries they're going to have for your home. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how much those were?
Those were about $3,000 for one of those.
So for about $10,000, mm-hmm. they may not be able to run your home and your, you know, as far as
full size home.
But you know, we're in the Chicago area. A lot of people go up to the playgrounds of Wisconsin. They have mm-hmm. a cabin up there. They have a trailer up there, something like that, on the middle of, on a lake or something.
A $10,000 investment might have the power for that thing for years.
Exactly. And it seems like the technology is coming down to the everyday Joe mm-hmm. that you can play. Now, $10,000 is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. But you know what? $10,000 is not impossible for something that you value. And what I would say is that we're starting to get to the prices. And those prices are going to go down. This mm-hmm. is technology. Think about televisions that start out $5,000 and $10,000, and before you know it, you're buying them for $500.
Mm-hmm.
And computers that start out $2,500 or whatever, and you know,
getting
every
away
week
with a tank of gas now.
Every week we're finding one for, you know, $200 mm-hmm. that is as powerful as you need.
$50 tablets.
Oh my goodness, $50 tablets. So this is very, very cool. I was very excited to see this. And I do think it's something that we need to follow because, like I said, if you got one and you could play with it, and maybe you could you know, run a cabin with it or something like that.
Even just charging one of your devices. If you have, you know, a fleet of devices that need charging, a wind turbine mm-hmm. just dedicated to that fleet of devices, that would be a great cost savings.
You know, and one of the ones, I think they have a mid-tier one here, and I don't know what the pricing of it, but it's basically made for RVs. You stop your RV, you throw the thing up. If you can get some wind, you can probably run your RV on that thing. So, wow. I mean, how cool are we?
Getting there. We are getting there. Between that and solar, you found a story about solar-powered schools in remote Pakistan that they're putting up solar panels. They're in the middle of the desert. They're pulling that power from the sun and powering their schools.
All right, so you have remote areas that are very difficult to get to. You're not going to be able to run electric wires and things like that up and down mountains and whatever it is. What works real well in very sunny areas? Solar power. And while in the United States it may or may not work best for us, for your particular home, if we're in an area, if we're in a third world country or an area that's remote, we're going to use cell towers. We're mm-hmm. not going to put up what we have, the infrastructure we have here.
Okay.
Solar power works really great. And for an area that's very poor, and it seems like that these students did not have light at night to do homework or anything like that, these kids bring in these lanterns, they plug them in, mm-hmm. they take the electricity home with them.
That's great.
And because of how well they work, the government official said, oh, why can't we do this with all the other schools? What the article, the title of it says, solar powered schools built for cheap. Mm-hmm. So think about that. It's for cheap. They have computers now. They have fans.
Changes everything.
Oh, and why I'm excited about this is not necessarily because it's good for the United States today. What I'm excited about is that when we get enough mass use overseas, mm-hmm. in these areas, it becomes much more likely to bring some of those technology to us. Maybe very similar to Bitcoin, which we haven't really talked about, where if you're in an area where your currency, you don't know the government does whatever, to be able to transfer and buy things with wealth, mm-hmm. be able to save wealth, this becomes very powerful. But if you're over in, you know, like Africa or someplace like that, to be able to buy goods over the borders with assets that you know have something, like I said, this is going to be very powerful. These are things to watch. How wonderful for these students that they have the tools that they need to hopefully have a better life in the future.
And in the future, we're going to be able to do some teleportation. Quantum teleportation has set a distance record of 100 kilometers. And before you get too excited, we're not talking about Spock and Kirk being beamed down to the surface of the planet yet. This is teleportation of the information about a photon. It is not the photon itself. It is the data of the photon.
And we're in the United States, so 100 kilometer is very difficult to kind of picture. But you know what is easier to picture? 63 miles.
Okay.
So basically from a place, go live downtown Chicago, mm-hmm. go 63 miles out.
And you can transport the information about you from Chicago to the suburbs.
There you go.
But not you. We're not there yet. But this is an interesting first step toward the idea of if I can send that information, I can rebuild something, 3D printer or sure. some other technology, somewhere else.
Fascinating world we live in.
Fascinating. Yes, Captain. What is probability, Chip?
Probability? Well, probability is something the human brain has a very difficult time understanding. And we use tools to help us understand things that are much more complex. The human brain is very good at looking at simple things. We're also particularly good at looking at maybe medium scale type things. But once we start getting three or four generations out there and kind of thinking about things, our mind gets kind of scattered. And so what we've done is we use statistical tools to help us, hopefully, make more informed decisions and better decisions. I use this professional every single day. This is basically an article on why we have a hard time understanding it without these types of tools. And I right underneath this, we have the article from the University of Maryland where they just spun off one of their projects they were working on that was basically, it's called Hello Campus. It was designed to help schools, universities, take this information they have and make it useful. Statistics is designed to help us hopefully make more informed decisions and also hopefully better decisions. It doesn't guarantee any of those things, but just having that information out there, and if it gets too scattered, our brain just can't put it together.
Scatterbrained. That's all I heard. We're moving on. There was a story this week about how federal employees' fingerprint files may have been stolen by hackers. 5.6 million feds' fingerprints are now in the hands of somebody somewhere.
So if you're a governmental worker, and security is a pretty big issue as far as the information, in the sense that some of it is more private than others. Typically, you use maybe a thumbprint or something like that to be able to get into your computer. And those files were stolen. Well, in the past, if you had to get into your computer and you typed in a password, and Steve stole my password, I could change my password. Mm-hmm. You can't change your fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unless, what was that movie? Was it
Men in Black, where they burned off their fingerprints when they became the agents? But then you just have no fingerprints. That's not changing your fingerprints. That's just, you have no fingerprints.
Yeah, and this is just really, this shows that passwords are terrible, and we really just don't have another way of working around it right now. Steve, you know, we have the new iPhones. And when you get on those new iPhones, you press your thumb down or your fingers down, and it lets you in. Should I be concerned that my fingerprint could get stolen, like it had for these federal employees?
There's always a chance that your fingerprint could be stolen. But one of the best things they did when they introduced that Touch ID system is they made a chip inside of your phone that information never leaves that one single piece of that phone. It does not go out of your phone into any other system. That Apple ID is linked to that Touch ID that is only on that chip. Now,
so it's only on your phone, and it does not get transmitted anywhere.
That's right.
Okay.
Of course, if your phone gets stolen, could the bad guys hack into that particular chip in that particular phone and pull that data and de-encrypt it and get that data? Potentially, yes.
Possibly.
But the odds of that are pretty slim.
And they're encrypted on the phone, too.
It is encrypted on that chip.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, this is once again, a fascinating thing to watch. Passwords are just such a horrible, horrible way to get to your information. And, you know, we just don't have an answer yet. We don't have an answer yet that's truly secure.
Well, what about using DNA? You found a story about Hong Kong has used DNA to publicly shame litter bugs on billboards. This is an interesting story.
All right, this is from May of this year that this article was initially put out. But what they were doing is that there was a group of people. This is not a government or anything like that. They were taking trash that they found on parks, and they were picking it up, sending it off to the lab, pulling the DNA, and from that DNA, they were recreating what they think you look like, and then throwing it up on a billboard and saying,
person who looks like this.
Potentially could look like this.
Right.
They're bald. They don't have hair. But what I can say is, boy, that would not be a pretty picture if you were the one that was known to be a litter bug.
It's a very interesting use of technology, that's for sure.
Well, the idea, and there's an advertising firm that's part of it, they're basically showing that the information that you have may not be as anonymous as you like to think it is.
Those of you who are getting up early to catch your episode of Too Much Scrolling this morning, you probably are one of those people that would rather be asleep right now. And you found an article that science is saying that maybe you don't want to be up till 9 or 10.
Uh-huh.
And if you are being woken up before that, that's the equivalent of torture.
Well, Steve, tell me, how is our schedule designed today that we usually follow? What period of life did that really start happening?
The reason why we have schools as we think of them today, and the reason why schools start so early, is because of the Industrial Revolution.
Sure.
We wanted to have people who were going to be good workers, who were going to show up early, get on the line, and make those things that we needed in industry.
And you know, we've got plenty of sayings like early bird gets the worm, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But study is showing, what we're learning right now is that for Americans, many of us are sleep deprived. And when I say many of us, I would say most of us. And if you have young children, we know you are. And if you have children who are a little older, yeah, you're sleep deprived too.
Quite possibly.
Mm-hmm. And what we're learning is there's a natural cycle. When does your heart wake up? When does your liver wake up? We're learning the magic time, maybe around 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the time to start school. In fact, this Paul Kelly is a scientist who's studying this. For his study, for this one data point, we should say, he said that he found that he moved school from starting at 8:30 in the morning to 10 a.m., they had a 19% increase in understanding and grades.
That's phenomenal. That is a huge jump.
And that's only one data point.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is that there probably is some real science to this, that your body needs to try to ease into stuff. Unless you're working in a factory that works 24 hours, the way jobs could be designed
because
now.
We do need those jobs. We do need third shift workers, hospitals and policemen.
Sure.
We do need people who work all night long, but those are hard.
But we also could understand, because of the rhythm that the natural body has, maybe there's a way of working with them, to ensure that they have the proper amount of sleep, things of that, that they are functioning in a healthy way. Now, we all have stresses in our lives. We all have things that we have to do at a certain time. But what this is showing is there may be a natural rhythm, and the more stuff we can throw into your natural rhythm, the maybe the better performance we have, maybe in less time. You know, there's a guy who wrote a book called, the 4-Hour Work Week. This may be allow you to get 8 hours worth of work done in a smaller period of time. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in the time that you're prepared for, or knowing the type of work that you need. Anyway, I enjoyed this. I think there's some validity to this and some things to just basically watch. As we start creating more data points with our phones, with our technology around us.
As we move into the information age instead of the industrial age, why not have flexibility? Mm-hmm. If you work best in the morning, go to work in the morning. You have a job where you can have that kind of flexibility. I, as a teacher, I don't have that kind of flexibility. School starts at 9
sure.
for me at the middle school level, and the kids are exhausted. They're tired.
I know, and for young people particularly, their whole schedule gets skewed over. They're likely to stay up later because their natural body tells them to stay up mm-hmm. later. Anyway, early mornings are very, very tough. And I don't know when that changes, because I always thought that as you got older, that things got earlier and earlier and earlier. You know, I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning here and there. But really, this may be just a natural human response mm-hmm. to this, where we don't really get started until naturally. Our natural rhythm doesn't allow us to get started until later.
It's time to be flexible and to make that happen for us. I think that it's only natural that we find out that information using that big data that we've talked about so many times before mm-hmm. and finding a way to make that happen.
Sure, sure.
I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to get through another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week and we can do it all again.
I think we can survive. If you need more information, there's lots of ways to get in contact with us. A new listener, Fetisha Downs from Chicago, she started listening to us this week. Thanks, Fetisha, for listening. She shouted out to us on Twitter. We're shouting back on Tuesday on Too Much Scrolling. She found us on Twitter because Twitter's the best.
Well, you can also find us on Facebook.
And Instagram, because we're getting into Instagram, because everybody's on Instagram. That's what it says.
Well, and if you enjoy what we do, we appreciate you contacting us. We do get contacted once in a while, but obviously it's not always as personal as this.
That's right.
How wonderful.
Yeah. You can go to our website, toomuchscrolling.com. You can give us a call. You can give us a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You can find us on Twitter. Or Facebook, if you like what Chip has to say. Or Instagram, if you can see if I know how to figure out how to take a picture in the next couple of weeks. And every day of the week, you can find more news at news.toomuchscrolling.com. Thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenblow.
We'll see you in the future. I just wanna think people, so we don't talk about what I wanna talk about.